We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run Finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
Loud and Local continues on The Rock with Kevin Deers, 99.9 KISW.
It's Loud and Local, the Stay Home Sessions here with Dan Tyson from Late September Dogs. First off, congratulations on the new album, Learning to Fall. Long time awaiting for the new Late September Dogs. First off, congratulations on that.
Thank you.
And
long time.
How are you doing, man? Like, we're doing this thing via Zoom. How are you staying safe? How are you staying sane? And are you getting restless yet?
Yeah. I mean, it's funny, this specific instance, I would be, I guess, being, I would be fairly bored, but I'm one of the lucky ones. I am able to work from home. So
okay.
I am very fortunate, I guess. So I do still have a regular job that I have to stay on top of. And on top of that, because we had scheduled our CD release party for literally March 28th, it was at the Whiskey A Go Go in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. We were all going to fly down. We had reservations. We had an Airbnb booked. We had plane tickets.
Yeah.
We had the whole show set up. We had bought all this merch. We had done all this stuff. We were getting ready to release this record, and it had been 7 years. We spent 7 years on this record.
Yeah.
And so I now have to figure out a way to not only fulfill all of the orders that had come from our Kickstarter, because we did a Kickstarter, mm-hmm. To get the record made, but now I have to sell all this merch, all this stuff that we got. So I've now turned our one of the rooms in the house into a shipping center, and I'm now learning how to ship stuff out of the house.
Yep.
I have to get rid of all this stuff that we have. I have to sell the records and CDs and all the stuff that we were only going to sell at shows. So I've been busier than hell, man. I've just been kind of trying to keep up with the demand. Fortunately, we do have a great community, and we do have a bunch of people that have been very patiently waiting for us to get this record done. And they've all been very, very patient with me as I learned to be a shipping and distribution center.
Right.
Not in my skill set.
I feel like after all of this, we're all going to have a few new tools on our tool belt. We're all going to be like, oh yeah, well now I know how to edit video from Zoom, and you'll be like, hey, now I know how to, you know, ship and do everything myself. And we'll all just be right. Like one man DIY, you know, workforces.
It's amazing. I had to, before this, when kind of the model was always get the record done.
Yep.
You publish it through, you know, if you're an indie, like kind of we are, you publish it through CD Baby, it goes out. And they handle kind of CD sales.
Yep.
And they send it to Amazon and distribution and all this kind of stuff. And it's all kind of out of your hands.
Yeah.
And that's great. And then you buy CDs to sell it at, shows, every once in a while. You don't usually sit on a big stock, you know, you don't kind of buy this huge amounts of CDs that you used to. You have some to sell at shows and stuff, but
yeah,
you don't sit on 1,000 CDs or, you know, you don't kind of do that anymore. But we sort of stocked up in order to have some for the shows that were coming up and the big release and all that stuff. So I did it the old school way, like you would back in like 03 or whatever.
Yeah.
Where, you know, you kind of have to commit. But we also bought vinyl. We did vinyl.
Oh, that's
vinyl
awesome. Popular record. So, ooh, sexy.
We have a big kind of visual element to it, which is the crow with the circle. I won't say a crow. It's a bird of some sort.
Yeah. Let's, before we go any further, I did want to mention, let's acknowledge the other people that are in your band. Let's shout them out and what they do for the band.
Yeah. So currently, my sister Liz Tyson, is the singer.
Yeah.
You'll hear on the record. The record has a bazillion voices on it. She's the lead singer, and she's sort of the musical director and sort of the musical final say, I guess.
Oh, okay.
She's the lead vocal, and then Jackie Farrar is our second singer.
Yeah.
And Jay Smith is rhythm guitars primarily, but also vocals, slide guitar, harmonica. He does all the things. He's our utility. He gets more credits than anybody else.
He's the catch-all musician.
Yeah, exactly. If something comes up that we want to try, we're like, Jay, do you know how to play that thing? And he's like, I'd give it a shot. Like, he plays saxophone and, a zillion different things. So, he does everything. The guys that played on the record, are Louis Williams and Jeff Eason. And they're no longer in the band. They're doing other stuff. They're the guys that played on the record still here, playing drums and bass on the record. So.
Awesome, man. Well, yes. Yeah. So the album's Learning to Fall. You said it took seven years hard at work on this record. So tell me a little bit why? What was the process of making, bring me through the story, man.
Yeah. The idea was, I think, a noble one. In practice, it wound up a little more difficult than I anticipated.
Okay.
The idea originated with a show that we did back in 2013, and maybe a little before that. We had been doing a series of acoustic shows, and we added a cello player. Acoustic show. And we did a show at the Hard Rock with primarily an acoustic show. So we had a piano player and a cellist and a stand-up bass.
Wow.
And I played acoustic guitar. Jay played acoustic guitar. But it was still the rock songs. We still did it as a rock band.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a lot of fun. And kind of before that, we had been toying with the idea of doing kind of an orchestra record. Because what's a better idea than an indie band recording with trying to afford an orchestra record?
Sense a little sarcasm there.
Exactly. So it started off as an idea for let's do an acoustic recording of some of our tunes, with maybe some orchestral instrument to, let's do a full rock band with a full orchestra. Let's make that happen. Let's see if we can make that happen. Which 7 years is definitely too long, but it was an idea that sort of kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
Mm-hmm.
And then, once we had it all recorded, and we wound up going through quite a few producers and we actually technically recorded the whole thing probably three times, overall, once it was all done, we recorded some of the string parts and some of the vocal parts at least three times. We went to different studios and did different stuff, and it wound up costing us quite a bit more than we thought it was going to. And then the mixing and arranging, once it was all recorded, it was this huge thing. And then kind of trying to do it all on our own, it was kind of too much to figure out. And we wound up meeting an incredible world-class mix engineer by the name of Chris Lord-Alge at NAMM, who ended up mixing the whole record.
I know that name. How do I know that name?
He's won 6 Grammys. He's sold 240 million records.
Okay.
He's mixed Alter Bridge. He's mixed.
Okay.
I mean, if you look up his, he's done everything.
I mean, that's why I know the name. Yep.
He mixed American Idiot. He mixed.
Oh. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. He's and he mixed our record for free because he liked the band.
So, holy man.
Yeah, and he mixed. He sent it off to Ted Jensen to master it, and Ted Jensen mastered it for free. And if you look up Ted Jensen. There's some stuff that guy's done too. He did Hotel California.
A little album that sold a few copies, right?
Yeah. He's done some, and then from there on, you know, that was the, you know, he's done every gigantic thing since then. So,
that's fucking huge, man.
We had the best. And honestly, I learned, We got to fly down to LA and go to his studio and be in there while he was mixing it and sit in the console, which is he bought Death Row Records
from Suge Knight, Tupac. My God, dude!
So we got to sit in there and listen to our record in that studio.
Oh my God!
Which was amazing, and kind of give him feedback. We've got video of us in the studio. And he's kind of rocking out to our video, our song and stuff. And
well, that's a priceless moment, dude. It was
amazing. It was really amazing. It was kind of, you know, it was validation that we were kind of going in the right direction, which was really great. After
7
years, you know, you kind of don't know.
For sure.
So, yeah, it was really a big experience. And we've kind of come to the conclusion that, like, if it hadn't taken us that long, we wouldn't have gotten to that point. We wouldn't have been able to have that experience and have it sort of end up the way it ended up. And it wound up being for the best, I think, inevitably, except that then we scheduled our CD release during this worldwide pandemic, which was
well, nobody could have pictured that stuff. I mean,
yeah,
it's pretty crazy. But I mean, tell me a little bit of so let's go to the moment that you guys get the album, you get the mix, you get the final mix of everything, and what was that feeling like? Try and describe to me what that feeling was like after 7 years. You and your band, you get the mix. Do you guys pop a couple bottles or just...
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, what happened was we were in L.A. when we heard the mix.
Yeah.
And he took us to this Italian restaurant in L.A. to celebrate. And it was one of those, like, I mean, it was total showbiz. It was great. It was really kind of like out of a movie where, like, the big red leather high back booth,
yeah,
and like knock a, like there's no sign on the door, you just have to know which door to knock on, and they knew him.
Sounds like Goodfellas or something.
It was really like if you watch videos of him, like he's that guy's from New Jersey, and he's, I mean, he knows everybody. He's been, I mean, he makes Bat Dance, right? He makes the Prince Bat Dance, like that's him.
Yeah,
but he everybody, and it was that kind of a showbiz weekend. It was really incredible. And that was also the first time we played the Whiskey. Like, we played the Whiskey that Thursday night. We just did an acoustic set.
Yeah.
And then the next couple of days we spent in the studio kind of listening and mixing the record,
mm-hmm.
which was just an incredible experience for us. So, we heard the mixes. We had a couple things the first day, like just some stuff that he the thing that was really different about what he did than what we were doing, uh-huh. first of all, I would spend weeks on one song because
I was so inside of it, like mixing it. And I do audio for a living. I do audio research and stuff for a living. So
cool.
I tend to be really detailed. And but I had also realized that like my my head was in the, well, we have this orchestra, we have this band, we've done all this work, we got to hear the orchestra, but we also got to hear this thing, we got to hear this thing, we got to hear this thing. And he just didn't have any of that to bother him. And he was just like, where's the song? Sound like a song.
You needed an outside person that wasn't attached to it to come and just, and give their take
on it. Exactly right. And an outside person with the best ears in the, you know, in the business. And he did that. He just kind of, he went through it and was like, well, that's what this song needs. And that's what this song needs. And so the first night we went, listened to it. Then the second night, we went back and heard, some of the kind of a few little tweaks, a few little changes that we kind of asked for. And we were just blown away, and we had another, you know, great evening and went out and we were just blown away by the possibility, you know. I mean, it was crazy. So send it off to us. Then, he was the one who said, you guys have to do vinyl.
Really?
Yeah. So little did I know what that entailed. I mean, if we had had just CDs to do, we would have had CDs out within a month and a half. You know, CDs don't take long at all.
But record pressing is a serious thing.
It really is. And art for records is completely different. Getting everything into a condition for them to create the art, and we also wanted to kind of rebrand and come up with a new concept, and that took a lot longer than we thought. So it was about 6 months from when we got the masters to when we were able to get the actual vinyl. And because vinyl is so, like, they wouldn't give us a date.
Yeah.
They won't tell you when it's going to arrive.
Yeah.
They give you this, like, well, between this time and this time, and that's like 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Of time. So I've made the mistake before of booking the CD release party before I actually have the music in hand.
Yeah. Not so good. Yeah.
So we waited. We waited until we actually had everything in hand, which was end of December. And the big surprise, they don't tell you vinyl is heavy.
Oh, yeah.
And when you order 600 records, they're like, oh, yeah, it's 350 pounds of vinyl just showing up on your porch.
Jesus. Yeah. Good times. So those are all available now. Are they all are the CDs and vinyl available now? Can people purchase them?
They can, but they have to buy them from me.
Yeah, exactly. So how can they do that?
It's lateseptemberdogs.com/shop. And it's just a cart that you go to our website and you buy it, and I go into the other room and I put it in an envelope and I send it to you with my own hand.
That's the best part, is knowing that the person that they're watching or listening to on this interview right now is literally going to be, you know, taking it off the shelf and putting it in a little box and sending it over to them.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So I'm not the fastest shipper in the world, but it will get to you eventually.
Five
I'm
star.
Learning. I'm learning as I go.
I give you a 5-star review so far for at least trying. So we're going to go actually into a couple songs from the record. The album is called Learning to Fall, and I'm talking with Dan Tyson from Late September Dogs here on Loud and Local Stay Home Session. So we're going to go into Curse Your Name and Ain't No Rest from the Late September Dogs album. Is there anything you want to say to jump into them?
Well, Curse Your Name is the first single. There is a lyric video for that. That's on our YouTube and on our Facebook page. Ain't No Rest is a cover of the Cage the Elephant tune.
Yeah.
And
We actually performed this on Live Day at KSW, the first Live Day.
Yeah.
This was our, that was our first live day. That was our first cover that we did, 45 years ago. I don't even remember.
Yeah.
But it was, it gets such a great reception and we've been covering it for a while that, we decided to put it on the record and it's got a little bit of a cool arrangement. Of, the horn section is real prevalent in the song and I'm really happy with the way the horn turned out. So.
Right on. This is new music by Late September Dogs. You can pick this up on their album. Support local music. Support honest DIY rock and roll from right here in the Northwest. Luring to Fall is the album. Here's Curse Your Name and a Cage the Elephant cover, Ain't No Rest. We'll be back with more from Dan Tyson from Late September Dogs.
Approaching me, she said, I September Dogs. I'm talking with Dan Tyson from Late September Dogs. You can pick up their new album, Learning to Fall, at lateseptemberdogs.com. You can buy the vinyl, you can buy a CD or a t-shirt. They were going to have a CD release show, but then the world went all crazy. So, you know, I'm hoping that, you know, in the other side of things, we'll be able to see, I'm sure, Late September Dogs play some shows on the album and stuff. We'll get to that in just a moment. But first off, I wanted to ask, let's go a little bit further back with your band. So you said that it took 7 years for this record to kind of see the light of day and all these different, you know, machinations of the album and like all these different, you know, and how it finally came to be is a really cool story. And we just talked about that. But let's talk about the beginning stages of Late September Dogs. Obviously, your sister is in the band. So you guys, how did you guys form, and had you guys always been performing like growing up?
Yeah, the story that my sister were here, she would disagree with me about the way this story goes. But the way that I remember this story is, of course, my sister is younger than I am by about 6 years.
Okay.
And so when I was playing, I've always played guitar. I've played guitar since I was, I don't know. I started really playing guitar, you know, taking lessons and stuff when I was seven, but I've always just carried a guitar around when I was a kid, and I just always wanted to be a guitar player.
Yeah.
So when I was 15, 16, 17, I kind of had started this band, and my mom had said, you know, put your sister in the band. And I
no,
said,
Mom,
I'm going to put my sister in the band. That's ridiculous. Like, that's so stupid. And she's like, well, put your sister in the band. And so, my sister decided she wanted, I mean, we just let her be the backup singer. And she was 12, I think, when we started. And we grew up all over the world. We moved around. We were
lived in Thailand for 7 years.
Wow.
Lived in the Philippines, we believe, and lived in Africa and Indonesia and all these different places.
World tour. The first Late September Dogs World Tour.
Technically our first show was in Italy.
Jesus, that's awesome.
Yeah, I'll get to that. But we had a show, and I had this band, and it was mostly cover songs at that point. We were just friends kind of doing cover gigs, and I was 16, 17, and there's a whole lot of underage rules about who can get into clubs and who can play clubs and who can drink and stuff in the Philippines. Like, they're not super strict about stuff.
Yeah, sure.
Especially if you're a foreigner. So we would play gigs and this kind of thing. So my sister would sing with us. And we had one gig. We had this big gig at this mall. Mm-hmm. And our lead singer was stuck in traffic and couldn't make it, or was sick, or I never remember why, but she couldn't make the gig.
Yeah.
And we're on our way there. Uh-oh. And my sister from the back seat, she's 14 at this point, she's been in the band for 2 years, she goes, well, I know all the songs.
Uh-oh. Yeah.
And we're like, okay, like we were stuck. And she got up there and she sang every song and just killed it, and the crowd loved her. And
yeah,
she was incredibly 14 years old, and she just destroyed worlds up there. And so she's been the current person of every band I've been in since then. Like, she's just been amazing.
Wow.
So that was a band that we had. And
So that wasn't Late September Dogs, right?
No, that was the first sort of band. They were called, this is terrible.
Uh-oh.
They were called XS Live. Which is one of those things you think is really clever because it's evil sex spelled backwards. It's absolutely awful. Just awful.
Evil sex.
Cringily awful. It's actually an upgrade because the original name of that band was Youth in Asia. Was Youth in Asia because we were in the Philippines.
I get it.
Even worse, right?
Yeah. I mean,
16-year-old me was not clever. So that was our first sort of foray. And
yeah.
Then years later, we were living in Italy and we just wanted to play one show. And
yeah,
there's a Melissa Etheridge song called The Late September Dogs. And it was one of the songs that we were covering. And we had put a band together for this one show. And it happened to be September 26th, 28th. I can never remember the date. And, couldn't come up with a name for the band for that one show. And we just thought, oh, we'll just call ourselves Late September Dogs because it's appropriate for this show. And we wound up that when we moved to Seattle, we couldn't think of a name. And so we just used that kind of in the same way, like, oh, we'll figure out something else. And here we are. Years later, we never changed it. We never figured out something else.
So what year did you move to Seattle, and what brought you to Seattle?
Well, when we moved back from overseas, we made the decision, as many people do, to make a go of it in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
That proved to be difficult, as it often does. We decided we needed more to sort of start out with. We didn't have a demo. We didn't really have anything. We were just sort of going to open mics and it wasn't really going anywhere. We spent about a year there trying to put a band together. And what we really sort of discovered was people in LA are mostly interested in their own stuff and not interested in forming a band or anything like that. So we figured if we're going to come back here, we need to have an established thing. So our parents had moved up here when they came back. Moved into the parents' basement, made a demo. Formed a band up here, and that was, I'm gonna give it away here. But that was 99.
Yeah.
So that was our first gig as LSD. We go back and forth on this, but I think it was 2000.
Nice.
I think it was 2000. It might've been 2001, but I don't remember exactly, but it was somewhere in there.
so we went, yeah, so that was the first one. And we had a full length record that we released in 2006, called Anything But Beautiful. And, we did an EP in 2010, and then we were supposed to have this out in like 2013, 2014, but no such luck. And so, yeah, so here we are.
Well, real quick. So you meant you kind of like hesitated to tell me that, you know, you guys started in 99 or whatever. And I just real quick wanted to mention that there's no, you shouldn't feel like any kind of weird feelings about that, because
shame.
You guys have that's a currency, you know, like that's like you guys have equity here in the scene, and you have your own place carved out within, you know, 20 years of fucking grinding and playing shows and doing it yourselves and the hard work and the, you know, shows in LA and, you know, trying different things and, you know, different machinations of the band, you know, and everything. So I'll just, you know, just really wanted to quick to mention that you guys have that currency and you have that, you know, equity within the scene because of that hard work. So there's nothing weird about that.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Thank you. I do think Seattle is fairly unique in that way, and that it doesn't necessarily value, it doesn't necessarily value the novelty of something. It doesn't have to be new. It can be, you know, it can be sort of ground down and it can be, it still has value if it's been around for a while. You know, like Good Seattle seems to respect, work.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and whereas, you know, LA is, seems to be about what's brand new and shiny and sparkly.
Yeah.
You know, and the music industry in general kind of seems to be, you know, oh, look over here. Oh, look over here. You know, there's somebody new every 35 seconds, you know.
Well, we might not be as attractive, but we have the experience, so.
And the music, you know, the music is good. The music.
Absolutely.
I think the music holds up. I think that's what's important.
And that's what it's all about, man. And so before we get into a couple more songs from the record and we talk a little bit more about, you know, things to come here and hopes of the other side of this craziness of the world going on right now, I wanted to ask you a question. I'm going to put you on the spot. So just know that, you know, you have as much time because I have all the time of the day. But I was wondering, pick four albums that made a distinct impact and positive impact on your life.
Oh man, four records. So I'm a weird case, I tell you. I'm one of those guys, and if you're a guitar player, you know who I am. I'm one of those guys that all I ever wanted to do was play fast.
Okay.
And that was my thing. And I went to GITA, went to the music school that teaches you how to play fast, man. That was what it was for.
Yeah.
And I did that. And I was, when I got out of school, and this is 94, when I got out of school in 94, I could play as fast as just about anybody at that point.
You talking about like shred style or like thrash?
Yeah. Like just shred, like,
okay. Like, yeah.
Shred all the stuff.
Yeah.
Which, if you recall what was popular in 94, that was not
it. No.
I had not gotten the message. And what's funny, one of my favorite eras of music is that sort of 1990 or like late 89 to like 93, 94 of those bands that like were still pushing the like hair metal thing.
Yeah.
And like there's a bunch of great stuff in there of guys that could really play but hadn't really heard that it was over. And I love that stuff. Like,
yeah.
That's my genre to kind of go into. But that being said, that was my thing. So of that genre, there's the extreme record Pornograffiti,
mm-hmm.
Is a huge influence on me and the way I play, specifically, you know, Nuno Bettencourt is just going to be kind of one of my top guys. I have to say, this is for the people that don't know anything but their one hit, but Mr. Big, probably the second Mr. Big record,
because Paul Gilbert as a guitar player was one of my huge, huge influences and probably the guy that made me want to go to school and learn how to play guitar.
Yeah.
And then it shifts, and then kind of about mid '90s, I started paying attention to songwriting and guitar players that were a little more
tasteful.
Yeah, exactly.
Wrote songs.
More careful and I got really into David Gilmour.
Nice.
From Pink Floyd, mm-hmm. and The Wall is to me kind of the number one, and to me, honestly, more than Dark Side, I'm more of a Wall guy than Dark Side guy.
Okay.
Because the story and the sort of push pull of Waters and Gilmour and the way that whole album goes together, to me, The Wall is much more my record. And then for kind of songwriting, when you get to, when you get away from, you get away from stuff like Dream Theater, which is where I went for the 90s. Like, I disappeared into prog metal.
Yeah.
From like 92 to like, I don't know, almost 97. Like, I just went Dream Theater and everything that was going on with Dream Theater and all that stuff. Just all the newly, highly technical stuff. And I still love that stuff. Like, that's still my thing, but I'm able to kind of go, well, what if we just had three chords on an acoustic guitar? Like,
sure.
You know, Bob Dylan can do it and, you know, change the world. And you guys are over here in 15-8. And you're going to do more with the three chords.
Sure.
So, I would say for songwriting, you have kind of Melissa Etheridge's maybe second record.
Okay.
And it's a toss up. It's the record that has, I don't know. She did Your Little Secret, which was this record we covered a bunch of songs off of. But it was an exercise in learning, okay, songs don't have to be that complicated.
Nice. You can strip it down.
I mean,
yeah.
He taught us all that, right? Like, that lesson had been learned, but I didn't learn that lesson until I listened to her stuff. And I always prefer female singers. I love female singers. I mean, female singers are just more emotive and more capable. And I've always enjoyed listening to female singers more. So I didn't really get it until, the sort of acoustic Melissa Etheridge stuff. And I was just like, oh, you can get there with three or four chords.
Yeah.
And you don't have to get super complicated with it. So,
nice.
I don't know. I mean, I got to mention Purple Rain.
Yeah. Like, there you go.
I went around on Prince. I loved Prince as a kid. Then I went to music school and was like, this is dumb. And then once my ear developed, I went back and was like, oh no, Prince figured it all out way before everybody else did.
Yeah.
No, he had, between Prince and the Beatles, like, they didn't leave anything for the rest of us.
No, I'll give you five. Okay. So that was okay. Extreme, Mr. Big. That was Extreme, Mr. Big. What was it?
The Wall.
Melissa Purple Etheridge Rain. And Purple Rain.
Melissa Etheridge, yep. Purple Rain. Yeah, that about. I mean, as far as like influences and where I come from, that'll about do it.
Right on, man.
I think if you asked anybody else in my band, that would probably be where I'm coming from. I mean, Images and Words, the Dream Theater record, like that was a huge thing for me too. But I don't really write from that place anymore.
Okay. Nice. Let's talk a little bit about, so let's be optimistic here. We don't need to be too negative, but like, let's just say we're on the other side of this things, whatever the timeline be, obviously things are changing every day. We're on the other side of things and it's okay to congregate and, you know, we can go to functions and go to concerts safely again. What are your guys' you know, kind of goals and some things you want to achieve, once we're past this, weird state of the world?
Yeah. Well, the first thing I want to say is that we have tentatively, we have rescheduled with the Whiskey, for June 13th. So as that date gets closer, we rescheduled that back, probably a week before, kind of last week of March.
Yeah.
So at that point, it seemed like it was
maybe possible. As we get closer, I don't know if that's really a realistic option.
Sure.
But right now, we're scheduled for June 13th at the Whiskey with Edema.
Nice.
As the makeup gig for our show. And that's a show that we actually have. They've been really nice. They gave us a huge guest list for free. Anybody from Seattle, if you make the trip,
yeah.
We had a bunch of friends that were going to make the trip.
Nice.
And if you make the trip, we'll give us your name and you won't have to buy a ticket. You just get in for free.
Cross our fingers on that one.
I know.
Yeah.
And my guess is they've been great. Like that company and the people that run that place have been great to us. And I'm guessing if that gets canceled, we'll reschedule again.
Mm-hmm. Whatever needs to happen. Yeah. So.
Yeah.
That's good.
So that's June 13th at the Whiskey. We also tentatively have June 20th at El Corazon.
Okay.
With Wyatt Olney, I believe. If that's still happening, if that, you know, who knows
exactly
what's actually going to happen.
Yeah.
And then 4th of July in Puyallup, if that's still happening. So those are our, that was going to be our big summer. Kind of those are our big summer shows. And then what we really want to do is do a show with the full orchestra.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, trying to find a place that will let us do it. And then trying to find the budget to be able to pay. Cause, I'll tell you the one thing about, orchestra musicians is they don't wait to see how many tickets you get sold.
Nope.
Like their union, they get paid.
Yep.
Whether they show up and they get paid. Like that's if they're sitting around, they get paid. They don't, you know, they're monster players.
Everyone they're not starving artist punk rockers.
Yeah. Yeah. they're not waiting for drink tickets. They don't
they show up serious. And play and get paid.
Yep. And what I'll tell you, it was such an incredible experience learning and playing with some of these people.
Mm-hmm.
Because they would come in and had not heard the songs before, had not listened to our music, had no idea who we were, maybe had just come out from playing something else, and would sit down with the sheet music. We had this amazing arranger, this guy, Bradley Hawkins, who was the cellist on the record and had also done all the arrangements, and had come up with some original parts. And we had kind of the way it worked is we would have ideas and he would have ideas and we would kind of agree on what the parts were, but a lot of the orchestration was him. I mean, all of the orchestration was him. Let me make sure I get that correct. But these players would come in having never heard it before and having never seen the music before.
Mm-hmm.
And within 10 minutes, look through it. We would do one pass and the first pass was great. I mean, completely usable.
Wow.
First pass in the song, 4 minutes in. Completely usable. The second pass was flawless. Like the second pass, they nailed it.
Holy crap.
By the third one, it was inspired and they were sort of taking little creative liberties and they knew they just had it. They just stuck it. And so most of the time we ended up using the third pass, but that's only 15 minutes. That's 15 minutes in. And that's one song essentially from start to finish with three instruments completely done. And I've never experienced that in a rock band. Like if you told a rock band they only had three tries to get the whole song 100% correct, you'd be like, you're insane. That's not there's no way.
Yeah. Wow.
So
there's a reason why they get paid the way that they get paid, because they do fucking good work.
And they're reading it in real time.
Mm-hmm.
And they're looking at the paper. I mean, they're just, you know, back and forth. When I left music school, I could read music fairly well.
Ish.
Not like, what's that?
You're like, I could read music ish. I could ish.
Ish? Yeah, exactly. Like if I sat down with something for a while, I could probably figure it out and get through it. But like straight up, I haven't used it in 25 years.
Yeah.
Cause it's not how you don't use it anymore and it just goes away. And it would take me forever to sit down and try to learn something. But these guys just straight through, you know, they would just read it straight through and it was amazing. And it was really incredible. And they would say, they looked at us and they're like, you guys are playing this from memory?
Yeah. That's awesome.
No, I mean, that's like, we have to, because we go to rehearsal, like we have to rehearse this stuff over and over and over to be able to play it. Like, you guys come in and just read it and it's great, but no, we can't do that.
Yeah.
So it was really an eye-opening experience working with these amazing musicians. The horn section, the horn section was incredible. These guys were just amazing. So
that would be cool. That would be cool to have that as like a full live experience, man. That's like a, that would be really, really cool. It's going to take a lot of time, but that would be totally a worthwhile, like, live experience. I feel like, you know, in charge of a little bit extra, you know, on that one and make it. You know what I could really see is if you could do that at the, what is that venue downtown, the, like, really nice dinner theater one?
We tried the Triple Door. We've been after them to give us a night, but, you know, to make it worth it, it would have to be a Saturday. They get booked out like 6 months ahead of time.
Sure.
I mean, we've been in contact with them. They just won't return emails. I mean, I don't blame, you know.
Fair enough.
They need a national to pay for that room. It just gets into like, what can we afford? How would we do it?
Well, it's certainly a good vibe, and there's places like that out there. So,
yeah, for sure.
But at now, you know, you don't have to worry about that because we can't play shows. So, you know, that's down the road. But at the meantime, you guys do have a bunch of albums to sell, and they're ready to go, and you'll be the one shipping them. So,
I will.
Yeah. Is there, let's plug your stuff again one more time before we go, and then, you know, go from there.
Yeah. It's latesseptemberdogs.com/shop. We have the CD is available. We have t-shirts. We have old and new shirts. And I don't want to say old. They're just a different logo. And we also have vinyl. And we have collector's vinyl, which is a numbered. Yeah, I don't know if you can see that. I'll put it.
I can see that. Yep, I can see that.
So it's
14.
A foil stamped number.
Nice.
And we only did 100 of them, and and we're not doing any more. So they're numbered 1 to 100, and they're collector's edition. You know, if this record ever does anything, this is a shot to grab a numbered collector's edition, and we will sign it if the person who's ordering it wants it signed. We can also do a signed collector's edition, but it does mean that we open it to sign it. So they have to sort of specify. There's a place on there to get those. And the collector's edition, we're actually only selling 89 of them because we kept 11.
Yeah.
The top 11 numbers we kept for the band. So those are also available. Shirts, CDs, vinyl, and there's regular vinyl too. And that's also there.
Awesome, so, man.
That's for sale. I also want to warn everyone, if you do go on the various websites, not ours, but the various websites, there is a band called Late September Dogs from Germany that broke up in 2005 or 2006, and their music is available out there, and that's not us. So if you hear a guy singing, it's not us.
All right, good to know. We're going to go into a couple more songs from the album, and before we do that, I wanted to ask, is there anything you wanted to say to anyone who might be listening and, you know, they're staying at home and maybe their life is a little bit on pause right now? Is there anything you wanted to say to anyone before we jump into the last two songs here that we're going to play from, which are I Am Not Proud and My Last Mistake?
Yeah, I think this is an unknown time for a lot of people, and it's really... it's completely unexplored territory.
Yeah.
I understand how lucky I am, and I understand how difficult it is. And I also know that I think everyone is running on reduced ability to cope. There's a poster that's also for sale. I don't want to mix this up, but the title of the record is Learning to Fall, and it's about how, as people, we move through life learning that we continually are stumbling and that we are continually hitting the ground. And if you don't know how to do that, you don't know the best way to get up again. If you learn how to fall, you learn to protect yourself. You learn the best way to stand back up. And I think you also learn a way to help somebody else learn who hasn't yet learned how to do that. You can offer your hand and say, I've been through this. Let me help you. Let me help you and let me help you learn how to recover from this. And I think that's something we're all doing right now. I don't think anybody's been through this specific thing before, when we all have different ways of dealing with it. And we can all kind of reach out and say, you know, if you need help, I can help. Music is the only thing I know how to do to help people. You know, this is, I hope there's some solace in this. And I'm not necessarily, I don't mean that you have to send me money in order for me to, to help. There are ways to get this and that are free. And so, you know, if you want to hear it, you can absolutely do that. I hope people enjoy it, and I hope it's useful for them in this kind of difficult space.
Oh, man, I appreciate that. I'm glad I asked. So right on, man, dude. Thank you so much for your time. And we're going to go into the last two songs here, which are not the last two songs of the album, but the two songs we chose to play. So I Am Not Proud and My Last Mistake. Dan Tyson here from Late September Dogs. Is there anything you want to say about these two songs before we jump in?
I Am Not Proud is the first song that we actually released. We did that as a demo for the Kickstarter that we did. So there's a version of that that's out there on a video. And this is the final version. This is the mixed version. Chris Lord-Alge mixed this, and it's much better.
Cool.
Than the one we did originally. And then My Last Mistake, we haven't teased or we haven't used any of this for anything. So this is the first time anybody's heard this, unless you bought the record. And it was, this was the last song that was written. It's the only song on the record that doesn't have, the orchestra on it. It's just a broad, brutal rock song. So, enjoy.
Right on, dude. Thank you so much for your time, bro.
Rock and roll, sir. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Longer through what I deserved.
Oh,
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.